Recently, the state newspaper posted video from a vigil held at the South Carolina State House just down the road from my law school.
We're here today pretty much because on Easter Sunday, Sasha was found slouched over her steering wheel while her car was running with bullets in her chest. And Sasha became a victim of yet another trans homicide. So I'm here today to say that Sasha's life matter, and I'm also here to say that all Black trans lives matter, every single one.
This is the voice of Sasha. You know, this is us talking. This is us uprising, you know, for people to respect who we are. It took us a long time for most of us to come out of the closet of who we is, and I'd be damned if I go back in the closet because I'm scared of a gun.
The accompanying piece highlighted two facts. First, there have been a number of attacks against transgendered individuals in South Carolina. And second, my state is one of only five states in the country with no hate crimes law. That said, these are not the only five states where that lack of a hate crimes law would impact cases such as these. So what's going on in these states that lack hate crime laws, and what can we do to strengthen the hate crimes laws in other states? Hi, this is Colin Miller. I'm an associate dean and professor at the University of South Carolina School of Law, and I blog at EvidenceProf Blog. Today's special episode is hate crimes. The history of hate crimes laws in this country can be traced all the way back to Reconstruction, but it's really the Civil Rights Act of 1968 that was a game changer. Here's President Lyndon Baines Johnson announcing that law.
Men who are white, men who are black, must and will now join together, as never in the past, to let all the forces of divisiveness know that America shall not be ruled by the bullet, but only by the ballot of free and of just men.
The law allows for federal prosecution if anyone who, quote, willingly injures, intimidates, or interferes with another person or attempts to do so by force because of the other person's race, color, religion, or national origin, or because of the victim's attempt to engage in one of six types of federally protected activities, including attending school or voting. Subsequently, California arguably passed the first state hate crimes law in 1978, which increased the penalty for a defendant found guilty of first-degree murder if, quote, the victim was intentionally killed because of his or her race, color, religion, nationality, or country of origin. By 1990, 28 states had passed hate crimes laws, leading Congress to decide it wanted to collect data on the number and type of hate crimes in this country. This led to passage of the Hate Crime Statistics Act of 1990. Now, this law is notable for two things. First, it was the very first federal piece of legislation in any context to recognize and name gay, lesbian, and bisexual people. Second, it made its Uniform Crime Reporting, or UCR, program voluntary, leading to the underreporting of hate crimes. Here's a clip from a KARE 11 piece with Professor Jessica Hodge.
Almost 30 years ago, Congress passed the Hate Crime Statistics Act, but still, in 2017, reporting those crimes to the FBI from a local level remains voluntary to help gather a national database. And in many cases, Hodge says, hate crimes go underreported with the FBI.
Or they might look at these types of crimes as, well, they're similar in terms of, you know, a murder is a murder, a robbery is a robbery, a vandalism is a vandalism, you know, and so there's no need to further pursue it as a hate crime or kind of label it as such.
Thereafter, Congress passed the Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act of 1994, which did two things. First, it obligated the FBI to start collecting data for hate crimes based upon disability. And second, it required the United States Sentencing Commission to increase the penalties for federal hate crimes. As this presentation by the Federal Judicial Center makes clear, the adjustments can be found in the Victim-Related Adjustments section of the Federal Sentencing Guidelines.
These victim-related adjustments include hate crime motivation, for which 3 additional offense levels will be added, or vulnerable victim, for which 2 additional offense levels will be added.
So what does this law mean in practice? Let's say a defendant with a certain criminal history attacks a victim. If convicted, the judge would impose a sentence based upon a sentencing range of 70 to 87 months imprisonment. On the other hand, if the defendant shows the victim based upon the fact that she had a disability such as quadriplegia, the victim adjustment of +2 could result in that sentencing range being increased to 87 to 98 months imprisonment. And if the defendant shows the victim based upon their race, the victim adjustment of +3 could result in that sentencing range being increased again to 87 to 108 months imprisonment. Now again, these sentencing enhancements only apply to federal crimes, which created an issue with 2 hate crimes at the state level in 1998. By that year, around 40 states had passed state hate crimes laws, but 2 outliers were Texas and Wyoming. This was significant because 2 hate crimes committed in these states occurred in 1998. The first was the lynching of James Byrd Jr., an African-American man in Jasper, Texas, on June 7, 1998. Here's a piece from the Associated Press.
Testimony showed Byrd was offered a ride, then bound by his ankles with a heavy logging chain attached to a bumper. His remains were left outside a black church and cemetery.
The second was the murder of Matthew Shepard, a homosexual man near Laramie, Wyoming, 4 months later. Here's a piece from the Today Show on that case.
And welcome to Today on this Monday morning, everyone. I'm Katie Couric.
Matt is back on Wednesday. I'm Ann Curry. Good morning, everybody. A terrible turn in a terrible story.
It's really tragic and so disturbing, Ann. Matthew Shepard was beaten last weekend, tied to a wooden fence by 2 men who met Shepard in a bar in Laramie, Wyoming. 18 hours later, a passing bicyclist summoned help after almost mistaking Shepard's bloodied body for a scarecrow. Early this morning, Matthew Shepard passed away. The story has captured national attention and sparked a debate over the necessity for hate crime legislation.
The debate over the necessity of federal hate crimes legislation didn't lead to much in 1998, but 11 years later, it led to the passage of the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act. When President Obama announced the law, it was met with rapturous applause.
After more than a decade of opposition and delay, we've passed inclusive hate crimes legislation to help protect our citizens from violence based on what they look like, who they love, how they pray, or who they are.
The federal act does 2 things. First, it allows for the federal prosecution of hate crimes if the attorney general or his or her designee certifies 1 of 4 things in writing. 1, the state does not have jurisdiction. 2, the state has requested that the federal government assume jurisdiction. 3, the verdict or sentence obtained pursuant to state charges left demonstratively unvindicated the federal interest in eradicating bias-motivated violence. Or 4, a prosecution by the United States is in the public interest and necessary to secure substantial justice. Classic case where the statute was used was the federal prosecution of Dylann Roof for killing 9 African-American victims at a church in Charleston, South Carolina. Here was Attorney General Loretta Lynch announcing the federal charges against Roof.
Now, as you know, the state of South Carolina is also prosecuting Roof for the murders, attempted murders, and firearms offenses that he's alleged to have committed. We commend the South Carolina state authorities for their tremendous work and their quick response. It is important to note, however, that South Carolina does not have a hate crimes statute, and as a result, the state charges do not reflect the alleged hate crimes offenses presented in the federal indictment returned today. Specifically, the federal indictment returned today charges Roof with 9 murders and 3 attempted murders under the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Hate Crimes Prevention Act. This federal hate crimes law prohibits using a dangerous weapon to cause bodily injury or attempting to do so on the basis of race or color. The Shepard-Byrd Act was enacted specifically to vindicate the unique harms caused by racially motivated violence.
The second thing the federal act does is allow state and local law enforcement to call on the resources of the Justice Department and the FBI to help investigate and prosecute hate crimes at the local level. The effect of these laws can be seen in the Byrd and Shepard cases. Because the Byrd case was a racial hate crime, officials in Jasper were able to get $284,000 in federal grants to work in the case. On the other hand, because the Shepard case dealt with sexual orientation and wasn't eligible for federal grants at the time, Laramie had to furlough 5 law enforcement officials to be able to handle the case at the local level. Now, since 2009, Texas passed a hate crime law, with 45 states in total now having state hate crimes laws. But these hate crimes laws vary in scope. One of the main differences is that many states don't define hate crimes in a way that covers crimes targeted against members of the LGBT community. I spoke with Dr. Phyllis Gerstenfeld of California State University Stanislaus about this issue.
So that's the biggest disparity there is which groups are protected. And I think the most obvious part of that is whether sexual orientation is included, because we know from the data that the LGBT people are some of the most frequent victims of hate crimes, and yet a lot of states have conspicuously left them out of the hate crime protection.
Indeed, the Southern Poverty Law Center crunched the federal data on hate crimes and came to a stunning conclusion. Here's Mark Batak detailing the findings on PBS NewsHour.
Very much so. We looked actually at 14 years of FBI data, hate crime data, and made comparisons to the size of the populations of various minority groups in this country. And to make a very long story short, what we found was that on a per capita basis, at least in recent years, LGBT people are targeted for violent hate crimes at a rate of two times that of Muslims or black people, four times that of Jews, and 14 times that of Latinos. So the bottom line is that LGBT people really are targeted in a way that no other minority group, or at a rate higher than any other minority group in this country, at least in recent times.
And yet, despite the fact that members of the LGBT community are so often the victims of hate crimes, 15 states have hate crimes laws that don't cover crimes based upon sexual orientation or gender identity. These states are Alabama, Alaska, Idaho, Michigan, Mississippi, Montana, North Carolina, North Dakota, Ohio, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, South Dakota, Utah, Virginia, and West Virginia. But at least these states have state hate crimes laws, unlike the five states alluded to in the introduction. So what are the five states without any state hate crimes laws?
So my favorite time of the year is fast approaching. And yes, I'm talking about fall or autumn, whatever you want to call it. The point is, I love it when the weather cools down, because my favorite thing to do is snuggle into my bed with super comfy sheets. And that is why I love Boll & Branch sheets. Every single thing that Boll & Branch makes, from their bedding to the blankets, is made from 100% organic cotton. So they start out really super soft, and they actually get softer over time. I've been using Boll & Branch sheets for the last couple of years, and everybody in my family loves them. Everybody who tries them loves them. And that's why they have thousands of five-star reviews. Plus, Forbes, The Wall Street Journal, Fast Company, they all have talked about Boll & Branch. Even three U.S. presidents sleep on Boll & Branch sheets. But yes, they're lovely, luxury, incredibly comfortable, the softest sheets you'll ever use, but they're not priced like that because you're buying directly from them. So essentially you're paying wholesale prices. Now, we all know luxury sheets cost a lot. They can even cost up to $1,000 in the store, but Boll & Branch sheets are a couple of $100. By the way, not only do you want to get them for yourself, they make great gifts. They come beautifully, beautifully packaged. They're in a box. You open up this beautiful box inside. They're like inside a beautiful cloth bag that's wrapped in ribbon. I mean, they're just beautiful. It's just, the whole experience is awesome. Now, you don't have to take my word for it, all right? Because shipping is free, you can try them for 30 nights, and if you don't like them, all you do is send them back for a refund. But I doubt you're gonna wanna send them back. But there's no risk and no reason not to give them a try. So to get you started, right now our listeners get $50 off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com if you use the promo code undisclosed. Go to bollandbranch.com today for $50 off your first set of sheets. I'm gonna spell that out for you. That's boll, B-O-L-L, and branch.com. Don't forget to use the promo code undisclosed to get $50 off your first set of sheets so that, like me, you can spend these cooler months wrapped up in soft, cozy, snuggly sheets from Boll & Branch.
The first state is Arkansas. Given that Arkansas is one of the five states without a hate crime statute, it's unsurprising it was the site of the first federal prosecution under the Shepard and Byrd Act. Here's Ozark's First reporting on the case of Frankie Mabee.
A jury found Mabee drove a truck from here. An indictment says he and his passenger, Sean Popejoy, started yelling racial words at a group of Hispanic men. Then it says Mabee followed their vehicle and forced it off the road. It overturned and caught fire. U.S. attorneys say one of the victims had life-threatening injuries, and the other four were also badly hurt.
We are here today because this is a horrible, horrible crime. And this case sends a message.
Now, Mabee is becoming an example. In his sentencing, U.S. attorneys asked the judge to consider what they call his complete indifference to human life. He and a passenger in his vehicle are the first two people sentenced under the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act. The law took effect in 2009.
If acts of violence are committed because of who somebody is, because of what they look like, they will be prosecuted. And as prosecutors, we will use every tool that we have to bring those cases.
So why does Arkansas not have a hate crimes law? The first attempt to pass one failed in 2001 because some didn't think it should cover crimes motivated by the victim's sexual orientation. In 2017, a similar bill failed to make it out of committee, largely for the same reasons. This lack of a hate crimes law in Arkansas has now been brought back into focus based upon an alleged hate crime in Rogers, Arkansas, based upon sexual orientation. Here's a KARK 4 news piece about the case featuring a comment by Representative Greg Letting, who introduced the 2017 bill.
Right now, Arkansas is one of five states without a hate crime law. Now a case in Rogers bringing new attention to this issue. Officers responded to a disturbance call later, citing four men for disorderly conduct. One of the men says he was attacked for being gay, calling it a hate crime. The only way to consider additional charges is bringing the case to a federal level.
It's a bad look for our state, especially when you consider that in recent years, Arkansas has been among the top states, having the highest number of active hate groups per capita. That's not a good look for the state when we're trying to get employees and people to move here.
Letting tried to add this law to the books in 2017, but it never got out of the House Judiciary Committee. People who oppose this type of law believe it would treat select groups with more importance.
This thinking in opposition to hate crimes laws helps to explain why Georgia is the second state without a hate crimes law. Georgia actually did pass a hate crimes law in 2000. It enhanced a criminal sentence if the judge or jury determined beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant intentionally selected a victim or the victim's property as the object of the offense, quote, because of bias or prejudice. In 2002, this statute was used against Christopher Botts and Angela Piscata, who attacked two African-American brothers who were visiting some of Atlanta's historical sites after a study session. The defense attacked the brothers after saying things like, N-word, we need money, people like you, that's why America is the way it is, N-word, I hate you, and die, N-word. The Supreme Court of Georgia, however, struck down the statute, concluding it was void for vagueness in violation of the Due Process Clause. According to the court, the hate crime statute could be used to enhance the sentences of, quote, a rabid sports fan convicted of uttering terroristic threats to a victim selected for wearing a competing team's baseball cap, a campaign worker convicted of trespassing for defacing a political opponent's yard signs, a performance car fanatic convicted of stealing a Ferrari, any bias or prejudice for or used against a selected victim or property, no matter how obscure, whimsical, or unrelated to the victim it may be, but for which proof beyond a reasonable doubt might exist, can serve to enhance a sentence. After years of failed efforts to put hate crimes laws back in the book in Georgia, there's finally a glimmer of hope. While most of these efforts came from members of the minority Democratic Party in Georgia, earlier this year, Republican House member Megan Hansen introduced a new hate crimes bill.
In the past year, we have seen a resurgence of tribal, group-based animosities that characterized this country decades ago, where crimes and violence against individuals are motivated solely by group membership, their race, religion, ethnicity, gender, or sexual orientation. However, the meaning of being an American is that we are all unique individuals, not some members of predefined caste or group identity. Attacks motivated by hate for a group are so heinous, so harmful, and so distinct from typical crimes that they exist not only to harm the individual target of that crime, but to also create fear and oppress the entire community to which that individual belongs. We have seen a rise in these attacks nationally, where hate and anger for a group over a difference in identity and beliefs motivates an attacker. In recent months, we've seen such attacks in New York, Texas, Virginia, And we've also seen them right here in Georgia. From bomb threats to our Jewish community centers and schools, to the twisted racist attack on an 8-year-old's birthday party.
Given that we've covered both the Joey Watkins and Dennis Perry cases, we have a lot of Georgia listeners, and we encourage you to contact your state representatives to get behind these bills to get a hate crimes law back in the books in Georgia. Now, Georgia ties into the third state that lacks a hate crimes law, Indiana, which also used to have a hate crimes law in the books. Indeed, Indiana may have had the first state hate crimes law in the country. According to an article in the Indianapolis Star, in 1946, the paper uncovered an effort to reorganize the KKK in the Hoosier state. In response, the next year, the state passed a law that banned racketeering and hate, making it unlawful to conspire, organize, or associate for the purpose of spreading malicious hatred by reason of race, color, or religion against any person. But in 1977, this hate crime law was dropped when Indiana's criminal code was overhauled. According to Bobby Small, the lead staffer on the effort, this overhaul was due to the belief that hate crimes would be covered under other sections of Indiana's criminal code. But this belief was wrong, and it's arguable that Indiana's lack of a hate crimes law has led to the recent spike in hate crimes. Here's a piece from RTV6.
This is not a time to be quiet, even though these crimes are really designed to make us fearful and to silence us.
Those words from a local pastor. She's part of a push to put pressure on the General Assembly to enact a hate crimes law right here in Indiana. RTV6 State House reporter Kitty Hines is live with the message and the details on how timing could play a big role here. Katie.
Leaders of another of faith communities are joining with the Marion County prosecutor, and they're asking state lawmakers to not close the door on a discussion on a hate crimes law. They'd like to see it done before the end of the session in the next 6 weeks. The push comes after the second bomb threat to the Jewish Community Center in Indianapolis in 2 weeks' time. It comes 4 months after vandals spray-painted racial slurs on a Bean Blossom church. The bill would give judges the ability to hand down a tougher sentence if a crime is motivated by a victim's race, religion, or other factors. Reverend Shannon McVeigh Brown calls the recent threats and vandalism heartbreaking. She leads a diverse congregation at Christ Church Cathedral downtown, and she's worried that harsh words targeting some of her members for their race and sexual orientation could escalate. She says it's a way to write into law the value that everyone should be treated with dignity.
When you leave out specific language about that, that it leaves room for people to think that it is okay to go after certain groups and certain communities to target them with hate.
So, true story, the only company I have ever used for any of my business needs when it comes to like stationery, business cards, even like plaques and wall hangings, all kinds of things, promotional products, is Vistaprint. I've been using them for, gosh, at least 13 years. When I opened up my very first law practice, I had moved from Virginia, where I worked with a firm, to Connecticut, and there wasn't a lot going on there. So I started my own practice, my own little thing, and I started with Vistaprint. I got an amazing deal with them. I have used them ever since, all of my business cards, and even, by the way, the business cards that we order for Undisclosed, for my other podcast, The 45th, the cards that I've used for pretty much anything. And I always tell people, use Vistaprint. I've gotten t-shirts from there, I've gotten all kinds of things. So I love Vistaprint, and that's why I'm so excited that they are a sponsor for Undisclosed. Now, you can get custom cards from them with whatever colors, fonts, designs, and images you want. They've got templates already made, and they're such great quality. Whether you're a startup or a business with a century of history, they are gonna make you look polished and professional to your customers. With Vistaprint, you create truly professional business cards. You can pick the paper stock, the style, the quantity, I mean, for as low as $10. And Vistaprint uses only really carefully selected inks, responsibly sourced paper stocks. Like I said, you can add your own logo, you can use one of theirs, contact information. It's so easy. The templates are online. It's kind of fun actually designing it. And when you're ready to go, just check out. And your satisfaction, by the way, is 100% guaranteed, or they will make it right. They can either reprint your order or offer you a refund. Now, Vistaprint wants you to do something great for your business right now, which is why our listeners will get 500 high-quality custom business cards starting at just $9.99. You heard that correctly. 500 of them for $9.99. Use the code undisclosed at vistaprint.com when you're checking out. Once again, that's the code undisclosed at vistaprint.com. Undisclosed at vistaprint.com to get 500 business cards for just $9.99.
So does the lack of a law in Indiana encourage hate crimes? This is always going to be a chicken or the egg question, but John Turris, a professor at LaGrange College, looked through the federal hate crimes data with his students and found that Indiana has 16 hate groups compared to 10 in Wisconsin, despite the states being of similar sizes. And while Arkansas is similar in size to Kansas, it has 2.5 times as many hate groups. Overall, Turris found that states without hate crimes laws had 5.3 hate groups per million residents versus 3.05 hate groups per million residents for states with hate crimes laws. But how important was this data? According to Professor Gerstenfeld, the vast majority of hate crimes are not committed by members of hate groups.
You know, most people tend to believe that, you know, when they hear hate crimes, they picture skinheads or Klan members or something like that. But what the research shows again and again is that the vast majority of the people who commit the crimes don't belong to organized hate groups. They are usually young men, usually with a group of other young men, usually don't have a whole lot of criminal history. And although certainly they're acting out of bias, they're not hardcore extremists.
And by vast majority, Professor Gerstenfeld means that 95% of hate crimes are committed by these males who are not affiliated with any specific hate group. And indeed, the recent hate crimes committed in Indiana have been by lone wolves not connected with any hate group. One thing that these recent hate crimes has done is finally tip the scales for Indiana's Republican Governor Eric Holcomb. Here's a clip from WANE from earlier this summer.
After years of failed efforts, Governor Holcomb is now calling for a hate crime bill in Indiana.
The push comes after someone spray-painted anti-Semitic graffiti at a synagogue in Carmel. News Channel 15's Michael Kuhn is in Studio 15 with a closer look at the incident and how lawmakers are now renewing their push for a hate crime law.
Pat and Alyssa, graffiti like this was spray-painted all over the sides of a brick shed at a Carmel synagogue Saturday. The incident has once again shed light on the fact that Indiana does not have a hate crime law. It's one of only five states without one on record, but it hasn't been for a lack of trying. For years, Hoosier lawmakers have proposed passing a hate crime bill, but time and again, the efforts have ultimately failed after not getting enough support from a majority of Republican legislators who say hate crimes are already covered under current state law. That includes this year.
And so, with a Republican governor and a number of Republican representatives now on board, the passage of a hate crime law in Indiana might be imminent. Now, here in South Carolina, the fourth state without a hate crimes law, things are less clear. There was a push for a hate crime statute in the wake of the Dylann Roof case that quickly lost steam. And the opposition to hate crimes legislation here in South Carolina is similar to the opposition in Arkansas. Here's a clip from WMBF featuring a floor statement by former Senator Jim DeMint in an interview with former U.S. Attorney Bill Nettles.
How can a victim's perceived status or the perpetrator's perceived opinions possibly determine the severity of the crime? The 14th Amendment explicitly guarantees all citizens the equal protection of the laws. This amendment creates a special class of victims whose protection of the laws will be, in Orwell's phrase, more equal than others. And if some are more equal, others will be less equal.
When I spoke with Professor Gerstenfeld, she also expressed the symbolic importance of hate crimes laws in states that currently lack them.
They deserve a harsher punishment. And the other argument that's been given is that the laws also serve sort of as a symbolic function, making a statement that these kinds of laws are just unacceptable, that this kind of behavior is unacceptable. And so in that respect, it's sort of an official purpose that way.
So is there hope on the horizon in the Palmetto State? The answer is thankfully yes. Last year, State Representative Gilda Cobb Hunter introduced a hate crimes law in South Carolina. It covers attacks, quote, with the intent to assault, intimidate, or threaten a person because of his race, religion, color, sex, age, national origin, or sexual orientation. Now to me, this seems like the type of narrowly tailored law that will survive the type of constitutional challenge made to Georgia's law and would send a strong message that South Carolina does not condone crimes motivated by hate. Representative Cobb Hunter plans to reintroduce the bill in January, and I've agreed to assist her in the campaign to get the bill passed. The pitch is that it seems like similar legislation in other states is now getting bipartisan support in the wake of the spike in hate crimes over the past few years. And so, if you live in South Carolina, we ask for your support in the form of contacting representatives about this bill in January. And I'm sure that similar support would be appreciated in Arkansas, Georgia, and Indiana. That, however, leaves the fifth state without a hate crimes law, and it's the home of Matthew Shepard, Wyoming. Unlike the other four states, there have been no efforts in the last couple of years to pass hate crimes legislation. The last attempt in Wyoming was in 2015, with Governor Matt Mead saying, quote, "You don't get to shoot somebody and get a pass because it wasn't proven as a hate crime." Of course, a hate crime doesn't mean that a batterer gets a pass because they didn't commit a hate crime. It simply means that someone who picks their victim based on some feature like their race, religion, or sexual orientation is eligible for a harsher penalty. Now, you've heard the major justification given for opposition to hate crimes laws throughout this episode, and many say that this justification is best expressed in the South Park episode, Cartman's Silly Hate Crime 2000. In it, Cartman throws a rock at an African-American student named Token, not due to his race, but due to his apparent fat-shaming of Cartman. Cartman is then charged with a federal hate crime and eventually convicted. This leads his friends to petition the governor for his release.
Hello, Mr. Governor, and thank you for taking the time to hear our presentation on hate crime laws, entitled Hate Crime Laws, A Savage Hypocrisy. Yes, over the past few years, our great country has been developing new hate crime laws.
If somebody kills somebody, it's a crime. But if someone kills somebody of a different color, it's a hate crime.
And we think that that is a savage hypocrisy, because all crimes are hate crimes. If a man beats another man because that man was sleeping with his wife, is that not a hate crime?
If a person vandalizes a government building, is it not because of his hate for the government?
The motivation for a crime shouldn't affect the sentencing.
Mayor, it is time to stop splitting people into groups. All hate crime laws do is support the ideas that blacks are different from whites, that homosexuals need to be treated differently from non-homos, that we aren't the same.
But instead, we should all be treated the same, with the same laws and the same punishments for the same crime. For in that way, Cartman can be freed from prison and we will have a chance to win the sledding race on Thursday.
That is our presentation, an idea that we call
Hate Crime Laws, A Savage Hypocrisy.
That made the most sense of any presentation I've heard in the last 3 years.
This is a superficially compelling argument, and of course, it lines up with the primary argument made by real-world politicians. But let's break that down a bit. Let's say a defendant in Colorado vandalizes a private citizen's $40,000 van. That's a state crime with a maximum punishment of 6 years imprisonment. On the other hand, let's say the same defendant vandalizes a police van. That's a federal offense with a maximum punishment of 10 years incarceration. This isn't surprising, as there are plenty of laws that escalate a punishment based upon the intended target of the defendant's conduct. But let's even move beyond intended targets. Let's say a defendant kills a man he sees with sweatpants and a sweatshirt at 6 a.m. If the victim turns out to be a well-respected member of the community on a morning run, the defendant can expect victim impact statements from friends and family members that have been shown to influence a jury in imposing the death penalty as opposed to life imprisonment. Conversely, let's say that by chance the victim is a homeless man without anyone to vouch for him. In that case, there might be no victim impact statement and a much lower chance of the death penalty. And of course, this dichotomy can and does happen even if the defendant has no idea who he is murdering. That's because courts and legislatures across the country have recognized the impact crime has in the victim's family and community has bearing upon the sentence that should be imposed. And according to Professor Gerstenfeld, this same justification underlies hate crimes laws.
The main responses that have been given to that is that regardless of whether somebody belongs to an extremist group or not, when somebody is attacked because of these things that are really intrinsic to who they are, like race and sexual orientation and so forth, that those crimes are qualitatively different from ordinary crimes, that they're more harmful to victims, they're more harmful to communities, and therefore they deserve a harsher punishment.
But what about the argument that hate crimes laws value some lives more than others? I spoke with Dr. Barbara Perry, a professor at the University of Ottawa Institute of Technology, about this issue.
You see some legislators claiming this values certain victims over others, and it creates a sort of form of discrimination in that way. And what would be your response to that?
Well, the legislation
is neutral in that respect. You know, it doesn't say that, you know, it protects black people or Jewish people or LGBTQ people. It says it protects people on the basis of their racial identity, on the basis of their religious identity, on the basis of their sexual identity. So that could be straight people, it could be Christians, and it could be white people. So it is neutral. And in fact, it's, you know, it's almost as often proportionately used against you know, minority members. It seems as if, you know, white people are more willing to invoke law enforcement and invoke the justice system. So it absolutely is neutral and protects everyone.
This claim is corroborated by the statistics collected in connection with the Hate Crime Statistics Act of 1990. Here's a clip from Newsy.
There are also some misconceptions about hate crime laws that lead many people to view them as unfair, like the idea hate crimes only apply to victims who belong to a minority group. The FBI, which keeps records on hate crimes, tracks anti-white crimes as well as the more common anti-black, anti-straight crimes as well as anti-gay, and anti-Christian crimes as well as anti-Jewish or anti-Muslim, just to name a few examples.
And what about the claim that hate crimes laws could lead to the enhanced sentences of defendants who attack someone of a different race or religion, but not based upon a biased motivation? According to Professor Gerstenfeld, hate crimes cases are actually extremely difficult to prosecute.
I think in principle they're all going to be facing the same problem, which, because I've talked to people across the U.S. and actually even in other countries that have similar laws, and it's the same problem, which is how do you prove an offender's motive? It's such a subjective thing. Sometimes even, you know, offenders may not be fully aware of their own motive errors, let alone trying to prove it.
So given this, one remaining question might be why it matters whether the five states with no hate crimes laws pass such laws, and why the states with limited hate crimes laws expand them if we have the federal hate crimes law as a backdrop. Obviously, there's a symbolic purpose mentioned previously, but according to Barbara Perry, there's also a practical purpose.
Well, I think the first thing is to look at how many times the federal legislation is actually invoked. And it's also more restrictive in terms of the context in which it can be invoked. And it only covers a handful of offenses, but 9 index offenses, 7 index offenses, something like that. So there are, I think, dramatic limitations to the federal legislation. And also, I think, just even limitations in terms of the capacity to prosecute the number of cases that would come forward. And I think people aren't really aware that there's federal legislation, even law enforcement.
Some of this might be that local law enforcement isn't aware of the federal law. But there's also the fact that other local law enforcement is aware of the federal law, but simply chooses not to seek federal assistance or even report their hate crimes. Here's a clip from 11 Alive out of Georgia.
None of the police agencies that investigated report hate crimes to the FBI either. The nonprofit journalism organization ProPublica asked them why. DeKalb said there was no reason to. Georgia had no hate crime law. Clayton County said it didn't track them because no pattern or existence of hate crimes had been identified.
Are there hate crimes in Cobb County?
We do track hate crimes in Cobb County.
Of the 39 hate crimes that were reported in Georgia last year, 25 of them occurred in Cobb County. That's because Cobb is one of the few agencies that does collect, track, and report hate crimes.
A lot of people, Republican and Democrat, black and white, rich and poor, are starting to believe this is going about things the wrong way, especially in a world where hate seems to be on the rise. Time will tell whether some of the reforms we need will become a reality. So now's the time to get your voice heard, especially if you live in one of the five states without a hate crimes law.
Southern trees bear strange.
Thanks for listening to this special episode of Undisclosed. We'll be back on Monday with the next episode in the Dennis Perry series. I'd like to thank the following people: Hannah McCarthy for editing, Christy Williams for website management, Baluki for our logo design, and Mital Tehan, our executive producer. The credit song is Strange Fruit by Billie Holiday. I'd like to thank our sponsors. Their promotional details are in the show notes and on our website under the new sponsor page. As always, you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram using the handle @UndisclosedPod. And you can become a patron and get access to additional content by going to patreon.com/UndisclosedPod.